watching and or listening to OccupySkidRow.us, a weekly VeteransNewsNet.us feature presented every Tuesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, live at SkidRowStudios.com. We invite you to join our discussion now. Call us at 1-800-893-9562 or text us at 310-266-9465. And now, here's your host, Chaplain Willis Buddy Clark Jr.
Hello out there in Radio Land and all you YouTubers. We're here in Skid Row Radio and we're talking about Occupy LA. And of course, tonight we have some special guests arriving. They're veterans. They'll be here any minute right now. But right now, let's introduce our guests. We got Scott, we got Rose, and we got Jeff. So, Jeff, kind of open up for us and tell us what's coming down the line with your guests.
Well, we have a little bit of a scheduling tension we are going to overcome with our usual aplomb, I hope. It's been an interesting week. Some of the things we've been working on for a while are really starting to coalesce. In particular, veterans are doing exactly what the concept of this show is. Mm-hmm. The name of this show is Occupy Skid Row.
Right.
And this past weekend, a group of veterans led by an organization called the Vet Hunters Project went to Skid Row and did a feeding with the homeless. We were there. And also, you, buddy, as part of your multifaceted approach to making the world a better place, recently bought someone a motorhome, a homeless individual.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And so our guest, by the way, just texted me. He's not going to be able to make it.
Okay.
Okay, so we can...
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so we can maybe use play that other video also instead of this segment, Jenny, just to give you a little heads up there. So what I was starting to say is that Buddy... bought a motorhome for a homeless gentleman, and there was a bit of a disagreement about how to handle its maintenance and financing it. And we had a very interesting sit-down in Gladys Park on Skid Row, and we shot some video of a conversation that could have been heated, and at times it was a little bit heated. It could have degenerated into it's just hostility and a bad outcome. But instead, it led to a great resolution. And I think it might be interesting to show folks that footage and talk about it a little bit. So we actually have two pieces of footage. One is of this conversation in the park that I just described, and also some footage of the veterans feeding the homeless. And Scotty, as a proponent of peace, and I'm sure, Rose, you're going to be on board with this too, I think you'll be interested too. I want to hear what you have to say about the way Buddy and the other folks in the park handle. I mean, because this is real life. Peace is, sometimes it's just sort of an abstract concept to people.
Right.
This is real life, you know. This is, you know, because life is about conflict. And so therefore, life is about how do you resolve conflict. And I think it was pretty impressive what happened.
Great. I can't wait to see the video and listen to what was said.
Yeah, it's a little, the audio isn't great, but I think it's good enough to hear.
Okay.
So what do you want to do, buddy? You want to start with the, can you go to either video right now? Or you, Jenny? Okay. Which one do you want to do?
What I'd like to say before she rolls the video is I've been part of negotiations and everything from major television productions to my children, okay? And so Jeff and I were talking before this, and Jeff thought, man, this ex-Marine, he's going to kill everybody. It's going to be a riot in the park. And of course, I'm thinking, you know, the best way to do this is to allow other people to talk and to get them to talk. So we've got...
Well, you know, I thought that because of the way you were saying it. You know, I thought I was at a mafia meeting here. But I saw that once it unfolded, you actually probably all along had a different thought in mind.
I really did, because I've dealt with the mafia before.
Yeah.
Every time I start to make money, the mafia shows up.
Amazing.
So if you see a guy...
They're such savvy businessmen, aren't they?
If you see a guy in a trench coat and a cigar, you know I got money, okay? Okay, if you're ready, we'll roll it.
Oh, so why don't we show the one of Buddy and the motorhome dispute? And we can hear the audio, right?
Okay. Okay, sure. So while we're waiting for that, we'll bring that up. This is one of the most interesting encounters I've had in my life.
Hello, record clean?
My record is clean.
Okay, so.
Now, what does that mean?
But I didn't say that. I said my driving record.
Did you say your driving record?
I said my driving record.
So your record is not clean?
My driving record is clean.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about
your driving record. He asked you specifically your record. Period. That means the totality.
When you
specify driving or prison, now it's specific.
Well, see, he knew that I had gotten out of jail.
You're assuming that.
I told him specifically that.
So in other words, so I asked you, is your record clean? The answer is no.
No.
Okay, then. So is that hard to say?
Watch this. I'm going to show you another way. From his culture to our culture. If I say cock from his culture, I'm talking about a penis or a rooster or whatever. If I say cock from us, we're talking about pussy. Mm-hmm. And then a rooster and all that. Mm-hmm. See the difference?
Mm-hmm. This is where the misconfusion come in at.
You, in your mind, said meaning driving record, but you just said record. He, in his culture, when you say record, you're talking in totality. That's where the misconception is.
Well, I watched the vehicle that night at the gas station, and you told me, buddy, specifically, you said, okay, what I'll do is I'll go to the DMV, and I'll pay the fees to get it registered. And then I will pay the small fee, which was the $250. You specifically told me out of your word, out of your mouth, buddy, that if I watched the vehicle that night, and I stayed there all night, missing work the next day, because I had to...
I kept my end of the bargain in spades. I did it ahead of time, more than I should have.
I'm just asking for, like, if you can help. But, you know, I mean, I'm not like... Like, you gotta do it, you know what I mean? You gotta help me, you know what I mean? I will establish this. You know, my Creator has always provided for me, and He did not bring me this far, you know, and at this divine time that He has planned far before, you know, to bring me to this point, to allow me to fail.
I have a divine Creator, too, and I don't believe He's taking very good care of
me.
So how would you... You know, like, here's my partner. I said, man, and he said, man, I'm disappointed in you. I said, oh, man, that would
be like,
it hurt me, man, right?
Man, I'm sorry I hurt you, man.
Now you said I'm sorry.
Now you said. See, before you went doing it.
Now you feel it. I'm sorry, man. That's how it goes. I'm talking about it, man. That's how it goes. All that without defending and being an attorney and shit. It's about us bonding together so we can together do what needs to be done right in front of us. Maintain trust. Amen. And maintain the trust. So we have, you see, I've said to you, God, you've got me in a fine mess here, Bobby. Okay.
Ending in smiles and hugs.
You know, I'm dealing with basically three guys that have done major time in prison and jail. And Gladys Park, which is a downtown area, which is noted for Drug Dealers Anonymous. Okay? So that actually happened. And it's actually what I really hoped would happen. That's what I actually hoped would really happen, that we would get together and we would bond, because it's essential that we bond with each other. And this bonding took place. So it's amazing. Now, sometimes I worry a little bit about people who pray. I've been a minister now going on over 60 years. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. But the term that is used there is effectual, meaning effective, righteous, which means being right with God, your fellow man, and even being right with your dog. So, so one of the most beautiful prayers I ever heard in my life, I served a church called Little Kentucky back in Indiana, and we actually had swinging bridges. We actually crossed the creeks or whatever you want to call them, on swinging bridges. So I was making my first pastoral calls down that area when I first became a minister there. And so when I crossed the bridge, I walked into this little home and I knocked on the door. A beautiful lady answered the door, invited me in, we sat down. She prayed the most beautiful prayer I've ever heard in my life to this day. Guess what? The next day, she killed her husband. So you just wonder sometimes why people pray. Now, I think some people pray as a setup, because they say if we pray it, it's going to be okay. And these sucker Christians will come in and we pray together. It's the front. But I hope this isn't true, because you see, basically, I won't name the man, but basically he's a very wonderful person. He has a family. He unfortunately has a history of being in jail, so he's very difficult to employ, and he knows that, and he's trying very hard. And anytime the disagreement usually arises because he has these anxieties. And so when he says, well, I believe in God and have faith, and so I'm thinking, oh, ye of little faith, just believe and accept the things and move on. But you see, I'm able to do that because I've been a Christian since I was 13. So faith, hope, and love, I know they really work. So he's having a difficult time because he's a new Christian. He's coming to these things, but he's learning. And we're learning, too, because in this process, that when you can sit down, by the way, I've been in jail also, and someday we'll talk about that, but not today. But I've not been in prison. That's a different thing between prison.
That's a longer stay.
It's a longer stay. How many years did he earn?
Only 45.
45 years. And his friend, I think, was what, 25 or 15?
I'm not sure.
I think his friend, well, they were bunkmates.
Yeah.
Did you hear them talk to me about how they got acquainted in jail?
Well, that had something to do with his friend being impressed with Earn's ability to punch mattresses with great force.
To pick up a mattress and carry it and then punch it almost to the wall, right through a mattress.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, I just moved in the cell with him, so I picked up, they have what they call knives, which are called shivs. So he put the shiv in there, but the more he watched Big Earn, the more he thought, this shiv's not going to make a difference. I better make friends with this friend. Okay, so Jeff, what's coming up next? Is our friend here?
We have a guest that's arrived down,
all right.
Downstairs. Not the Marine, but for the next show, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I love what one of the lines you said to him, I think, was something like, well, I have a creator too, and right now I don't think your creator's taking very good care of you.
I did say that, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it must be difficult to distinguish between somebody who's merely pious versus someone who is sincere. And, you know, it's something actually that might be interesting to talk to Captain Johnson about. That's one of the guests later in the show. Captain Johnson, the commanding officer for the Pacific Division of LAPD, will be joining us a little bit later. We actually should have mentioned that. Because the similarity, it seems to me, is that cops have to look at people and have to decide, you know, people who are to be believed and not to be believed often look exactly the same.
Yes, they do.
And you can't tell the difference.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So, and just as you are looking at that guy and you're kind of like not quite sure which is it, do I believe this guy or not? That's what cops have to do all the time. And that seems to me to be one of the toughest things cops have to deal with,
I had to deal with that when I was asked to be a chaplain of a police department, a very high-paying job, by the way. And so I said, well, I'm ambivalent about the homeless and the people who are not homeless in the police department. And if push comes to shove, being a pastor, I will side with those in prison and those who are homeless and those who are poor. So I really can't be your chaplain. But I will be able to put both sides together. For instance, when I worked with Lieutenant Romero in the Ramparts, and we worked with gangs. So at that particular time, well, it's still true, when there's a drive-by shooting, you know, there's two sides to the shooting. There's the victim and the perpetrators. But they both have families, and they're both human beings. And so it's a very fine line you walk as a chaplain, because you don't polarize yourself with one side or the other, but you never know what other people are thinking. So there have actually been chaplains who have been wounded and shot. So that happens too. But back to Lieutenant Romero, in fact, when Captain Johnson comes in, I want to ask him where Lieutenant Romero is.
Well, he's on the line right now, so should we just go?
All right,
let's get him in on this conversation.
Okay, well, good to have you, Captain Johnson. Where are you and how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, so you're in a convention somewhere, aren't you?
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you.
Oh, are you at a convention?
Yes, I am. I'm at the NAPOLA conference down in San Diego, the National Association for Asian Police Officers.
I have just finished reading part of your resume, and I am more than impressed, but I was really impressed when I met you at the Chamber of Commerce meeting, the fact that you wanted to be called by your first name. I think that's really important. And then the way that you related to the chamber people, and then after the minister prayed, I walked up to you and said, I'd like to have you on the program sometime, and you immediately said yes. So this is a direct result of what happened with the chamber and result of how you work with people in the community. Could you tell us a little more about perhaps how you're working in Venice?
Well, sir, first, thank you for having me again on the show. I think it's very important, you know, from the standpoint from community policing, one of my tenets that I personally believe is the community engagement piece. And why is that so important? There's for a variety of reasons, but three very important reasons. One, if we don't have a partnership and there isn't community trust in the police service that we're providing to the community, we're not going to be an effective law enforcement agency. Secondly, I think we all agree in society there's a lot of problems in the criminal justice system and in our mental health facilities and the homeless issues and just a variety of other community concerns. We need to have problem solving with not only our police department, but local city government, our state government, so we can address these issues of homelessness and problems facing our communities. And finally, from a prevention standpoint, it's my belief that a lot of these crimes that are occurring, if we work collectively as a community through educating our youth, providing after-school activities for them, we have an opportunity to really transform the youth of our community and prevent a lot of these crimes from occurring. That's one of the reasons why I've been so fortunate in my community outreach to have many volunteers and donors helping me to build the youth center at the Pacific Police Station. So that's something I'm very proud of, and hopefully we'll be doing our ribbon-cutting ceremony on September 20th is the planned date at this time.
Well, that sounds like an interesting concept, because I think September, well, listen, before I forget it, when you were at Ramparts, did you ever run into Lieutenant John Romero?
Lieutenant John is... we have a Captain John Romero on our police department.
Well, he may have been promoted, okay? I'm sure the same one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He runs our racer division that has a lot to do with our off-hours communication and our comstat and those things. But, yes, I do know John Romero, if that's the same person we're talking about.
Well, John Romero, of course, is from New Mexico. I lived in New Mexico. And when we were working with gangs, we tried everything. And we finally decided that we would pray. So we actually had prayer groups. And that's where I learned to become, you know, a chaplain and not take sides on either side. So if you run into Captain Romero, tell him hello for Buddy Clark, and I'd like to get with him again.
I certainly will.
Well, listen, I know you need to get back to your...
Well, can I ask...
go ahead, Joe,
yeah,
sure.
Hey, yeah. Brian, can I call you Brian?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. I love it. This is Jeff. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the police controversies that are percolating now. I imagine, there's often controversies involving the police, but tensions seem to be a little bit more heightened than usual across the country, especially in Missouri. And then there is also the Eric Garner incident in New York. I assume you're familiar with both situations, at least somewhat, right?
Yeah, not intimately, obviously, but I have been watching the news and seeing what's going on, and obviously very tragic cases.
Indeed. Well, I won't ask you to give your personal assessment of the actual cases, but I am curious about something that I think you might be able to help clarify. With the Eric Garner incident, he's accused of doing an illegal chokehold. And that seems to be what most of the focus is. And I have a couple of questions about that. One is, there doesn't seem to be any focus on what might have justified the arrest at all, regardless of what kind of a hold was used. And I was wondering if you happen to have noticed that omission and if that strikes you as conspicuous or not. And what is it? I know you don't know for sure what happened in that incident, but what would be the type of thing that would justify Eric Garner having been arrested at all, regardless of whether or not it was an illegal chokehold?
You know, I really don't know the facts well enough to really comment. And I think, I would be doing a disservice really to the process over there to comment. And certainly every state has, as well as departments, have different guidelines and justifications for their use of force policy. So I think it would really be inappropriate for me to really comment. So I apologize for that.
Oh, that's okay. But just as in terms of making an arrest, if somebody was on the streets, as Eric Garner was, would it have to be for some sort of a crime that was reported, right?
Well, yeah, obviously, for us to make an arrest, we have to have probable cause, obviously, to make that actual arrest. It could have started from a illegal detention or, we can stop and talk to people voluntarily, a consensual encounter. And we do that all the time in law enforcement. We'll approach somebody in a non-threatening manner and say, hey, do you mind if I talk to you? And if they say, no, I don't want to talk to you, I'm busy, I have to leave, and they continue to walk away, then we have to let them walk away, again, because we had no legal reason to detain them. And so that's the distinction and the key that we have to make and be able to justify. Was it a consensual encounter? Did we have reasonable suspicion to detain? Because we believe some criminal activity was occurring or is about to occur, and then ultimately, do we actually have probable cause to believe that a crime was committed to where then we could make an arrest?
Yeah, see, probable cause is the magic concept. That's the thing that is supposed to prevent the police and prosecutors from going after the people for no good reason. And that's what bothers me about this Eric Garner case, is that there's simply no discussion about probable cause. I don't know whether there was probable cause or not, but it's not even on anyone's mind. And I think that's pretty distinct.
Yeah, again, I don't have the facts of the case, and certainly, again, I just don't want to comment on that because I just don't know.
Do you have a second longer for one more question? This is Scott Brewer.
Yeah, I wanted to, I really wanted to, because I know we were focusing a little bit on the homeless issues in Venice Beach, and, I really need to really share some of the things that we're doing at Pacific Division, but not so much from a law enforcement standpoint, but from what has been going on with some of the partners that we have been, really creating a bond with several of our homeless outreach folks from LA County Mental Health, from LASA, from the Team Project, out of and PATH. I know there's a couple others that I'm missing right off the top of my head, but we have been doing several outreach events in Venice Beach that I'm really proud of, that with my clergy council, and again, like I said, PATH and SPY, which is Safe Place for Youth, St. Joseph Center, and the Team Project. I'm sure you know Lori Burns, but they have been teaming up with us, just doing an incredible job. We've done, I think, three or four now in the last 2 months, where my clergy and with a couple of my officers, but really with those mental health providers going out to the Venice community and our homeless community and doing outreach and trying to provide services for them. I think we've been touching approximately 75 to 100 homeless people on these outreaches that we've been doing. And what I've learned in the value out of this is it's a process. It was my hope that everyone out there, we may take 5, 10, 20 homeless people and get them into shelter, get them into treatment, whether that's substance abuse, alcohol, whatever the case may be. But what I've learned in this really collaboration with LASA and LA County and the rest of the providers is we have to build and gain that trust with the homeless population before we're actually going to be able to really help them into some type of social service to help getting them back into the mainstream of the community. So We're actually doing one this Thursday. And so I'm really proud of that accomplishment and really all those other service providers that really came alongside and became a partner with us so we can do good for our homeless population here in Venice Beach.
Well, Brian, I'm a psychologist and also a Christian church chaplain, and I salute you for your approach to this, because it is the approach to be able to bond, to gain trust, and to involve the community. And I will help you any way that I can as a chaplain, a psychologist, or a volunteer, whatever. So any way I can help, let me know. I'm particularly interested in what you're doing with the youth, and I'm looking forward to the ribbon cutting that you're going to have in Venice.
Well, you certainly will be invited, and I'm going to take you up on your offer, because, as you know, we still have a lot of work to do in Venice Beach to serve our homeless population. And, you know, that will continue to be a priority as long as I'm the captain at Pacific.
I think Scotty has one question. Do you have a question, Scotty?
Yes, I do. I live right on the walk. That's where Peace Now World Headquarters are. And I see a lot of the problems that occur. And for the most part, I'd say that I'm always surprised that there actually are as few problems as there are. I wondered, though, with the light posts that light the Venice Walk, it seemed like they would be a perfect vehicle for having monitors or video surveillance to allow you to respond if there's a problem. And I'm just surprised that that's not being utilized.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been working aggressively with Councilman Bonin's office in Reckon Park to really create a comprehensive camera project, if you will, for a long oceanfront walk. And we're going to be doing that in three phases. And the first phase is roughly, you know, approximately around Windward, and it probably goes, you know, four or five, six blocks north of there, and then in the same direction south from Windward and Oceanfront Walk. We plan or hope to have that first phase maybe actually installed here in the next, I'm hoping, 30, 60 days. I've been told that things are moving along quickly, but our plan is part of the public safety along Oceanfront Walk is to not only put in that camera project all along Oceanfront Walk, essentially from Rose all the way down, you know, through the walk streets, but also to enhance the lighting, the LED lighting is a nicer lighting. It's a brighter lighting that will allow for our camera systems to also add some public safety during the hours of darkness. And so that's something that has been, again, a number one priority for me because I think it makes sense just because of the volume and traffic that we have at Venice Beach. And it creates somewhat of a, if you will, a force multiplier in terms of we're not going to sit there and monitor those cameras, but, you know, when we know there's a crime that has occurred or some kind of incident that occurred, we can then go back and capture that video feed from that location. So I think that's going to be a big positive for Venice Beach.
Rose, do you have a question for Brian?
Well, I may be way off base. Thank you very much. I'm just going to throw this out here. I've always heard about the problems with immigration, but I've never really encountered or witnessed it or seen it. I have a good friend who is a mutual friend of ours, and her son came into the country illegally from El Salvador, and he was arrested in Texas. He was transported to Miami, and we're just batting 1,000. We have taken everyone's advice on Catholic charities, nonprofit here, nonprofit there. I've stood right by her. He's a good kid. There's no drugs, no violence. He's really one in a million that would be in this kind of situation. He just wants to be over here with his mother. and I believe he's about 23 or 24. And for the last I heard, his bail amount to get out is about, I think they've reduced it down to 5,000, 4,000, and maybe even 2,000. But she really doesn't know. I have done a lot of research. I have given her lists of people, like I said, nonprofits. Where can she turn? What can I offer her? Because I really want to stand by her through all of this. She's a wonderful person.
I'm not sure I understood, but I thought you said he was in Texas. Is that correct?
He was arrested in Texas, yes. I believe San Antonio. I'm not clear on where in Texas. And then he was transported to Miami. So he is currently in jail in Florida. And, you know, I've seen her try to contact him. And I called for her one time. She couldn't get through. So I said, well, you know, let me try. And so I tried. I get this recording, and the gist of the recording, once she calls in, is you have to pay an X amount, quite a high fee, to speak with your loved one, and there's no guarantee that you're going to get through. So they're going to get their funds, but there's no guarantee that you're going to get your conversation.
Yeah, that, you know, obviously we don't get involved in the issues with the federal immigration, but you certainly can call the local immigration office and be guided by what information they would give you, because it doesn't sound like you're getting accurate information whoever you're calling. So I would call the local.
Well, we've contacted Karen Bass and her office, and they directed us to locally for where her zip code is, where she's located here in Los Angeles. And it is, we're just going around in circles. So I thought maybe you could throw something out. You knew something we didn't.
I apologize. Obviously is a
thank you for letting me ask that.
Let me ask something that definitely is a police issue. I don't know, Brian, if you were listening before we started speaking with you. Buddy is obviously a religious man, and we were talking about how, even from his perspective, he's sometimes very skeptical when he's talking to someone who may be laying on sort of a pious act as opposed to being sincere. And it's really hard to tell the difference. And I was saying, you know, that I imagine that the police encounter a similar difficulty, and that's what I want to ask you about. And what occurs to me, what seems to me like maybe one of the most difficult things about being a cop would be that the bad guys and the good guys sometimes look exactly the same. And the cop has to make a decision, and sometimes it's just not clear which it is. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you can speak to that in any way as to how officers cope with that difficulty.
Well, that's kind of a tough question. I'm not sure really what you're looking for in terms of an answer. But I think it goes back principally to what we always speak about as Los Angeles police officers, and that's we're going to police constitutionally. And so regardless of somebody's race, religion, gender, ethnicity, we're going to treat everybody with the same dignity and respect. And ensure that you know, our officers are abiding by the Constitution, and we're going to police and enforce the laws equally, you know, and compassionately. And as I've always said, in you know, at Pacific Division, with lesser offenses, I have to give my officers a lot of discretion, right? You know, I don't believe that short of you know some very heinous crimes, but certainly infractions and less property type crimes of, you know, where there's an issue of is it most appropriate to write a citation or write a, you know, a ticket for something. My officers need to have that discretion to instill a spirit of the law. And I think that's important. And that's something that I've always tried to instill in my officers, that so people feel like, you know, they're being treated, again, one, fairly, but most appropriately and apparently that they feel that we've treated them, you know, within the bounds of the law.
I was looking for more something about, like, the emotional impact on cops. In other words, a good cop wants to treat a good guy as a good guy and a bad guy as a bad guy, and it's impossible to be perfect. Well, so, I mean, you know, sometimes they may treat somebody who's a good guy as a bad guy, and do they have to deal with guilt? And is this the kind of things that cops talk to each other about?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the issue of, you know, treating the individual, regardless of the action, with dignity and respect, right? Certainly, you know, we're not robots, but officers are going to go out there, and if they have to make an arrest, they're going to make an arrest. But my expectation and the chief of police, all of our expectation, is they treat that individual with dignity and respect. Because at the end of the day, yes, they may have done something, you know, broken the law or whatever the case may be, but they're still a human being.
Well, Brian and Jeff, Brian and Jeff, as the minister and psychologist, I'm going to intervene here. and give you a Marine Corps quote: "Discretion is the better part of valor."
The discretion, what I talked about.
Yes, it's the better part of valor. Now, it's better to be discreet than to be a hero. And this is what we learned in the Marine Corps, because if you try to be a hero all the time, someone's going to be hurt, and it could be you, it could be them. So, discretion is the word, and for you to trust your officers in their own discretion, I think it's a great bonding. I think we need to trust each other in our discretion regarding to Venice Beach. When we reach that kind of trust and so forth, we'll be on the road, I think, to faith, hope, and peace, and love. Thank you so much, Brian, for appearing on Occupy Skid Row, and I'll see you back in Venice.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much, and thanks to everybody else on the call.
Good night.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Take care.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Take a break.
Woo.
Is Mama Hill still on the line?
Who's Mama Hill?
Well, we've been on this road for a long, long time. And what I hear is it can tell.
You are watching and or listening to OccupySkidRow.us, a weekly Veterans News Net.us feature presented every Tuesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, live at SkidRowStudios.com. We invite you to join our discussion now. Call us at 1-800-893-9562 or text us at 310-266-9465. And now, here's your host, Chaplain Willis Buddy Clark Jr.
Okay, we're back. Boy, we had a 10-second break, I think. Okay, well, Scotty, let's tell a little bit about what you're doing with Peace Now.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, Mama Hill's holding. Let's talk to Mama Hill.
Mama?
Hello.
Hi, Mama. This is Scott Brewer.
How are you?
Good. I'm so glad you called in.
Yes, I did call in. I was on hold for a little while, and I almost nodded off to sleep, but I'm here now, chipper and ready to go. What would you like to know?
Well, I'd like to know what you're doing at Mama Hill's Help, and I also want to know a lot about your fundraiser coming up. Maybe you could start out with that and tell us why you need to raise these funds.
Okay. Well, number one, today was our first big day back in class. We had a very lovely class with 20 students. They were all chipper and ready to go in this heat, and they were very intelligent and articulate. So it's encouraging when we see that. And they're all from Dear Parenta backgrounds, gangs, etc. But when they come here, there's love and peace. And that's what we foster. And the reason that we want to continue this program, because sometimes it's very difficult with the funding that we don't have, we don't receive any funding from the government, et cetera. It's either from my retirement check or otherwise. So we want to continue because we see how important it is for our youngsters to be nurtured and to be loved. And we see that even the so-called meanest and most allegedly thuggish become a very mild, gentle, and articulate when they're given a chance and they're given the love they need. So fundraiser, This fundraiser is to bring everyone together in peace, number one. Secondly, to teach our children entrepreneurship so that they can learn how to organize and raise funds and speak well and talk to people in the community. And then thirdly, of course, so that we can keep these doors open. So we want to have peace, bring people together from all different backgrounds so that some of the stereotypes can be dissolved or dismissed about our children. And then and some of our children's stereotypes need to be dissolved and dismissed also about other people in the community.
What's the date of your fundraiser, Mom?
September 27th, and that's a Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. And it will be from 12 to 5, and we'll have different booths, different entertainment, jumpers, face painting. People will be selling food and art and whatever they like to sell. We want to encourage some of the smaller businesses to participate. And the children will be doing a lot of the organizing so that they can learn to be responsible. Everyone is invited, we would like also to, it's free for admission, but we'd like people to buy the food and to buy the other items to help to raise funds. Our goal is $10,000 or more so that we can have funds to buy uniform. We have about six students who are couch surfing or homeless right now, and we try to keep them safe and okay. We try to help them to continue to go to school and to eat. So it's important that we raise these funds, and we thought it would also be a way to bring some notice to what we're doing. We're a well-kept secret, and especially that we could all unite in peace. There's so much diversity and so much stereotyping going on.
Is there a website or a phone number that people can call, Mama?
Yes, there is. You can look at the website at mamahillshelp.org, and you'll see the videos, et cetera. The phone number to call is mine, 323-696-6910. And also, I don't have Aaron's phone number with me at this moment, but Aaron Kaminsky. If you look online, you will see the phone numbers because the website is going up with all of the phone numbers.
All right. Well, your work is precious and needed, and I urge everybody to go to mamahillshelp.org, and then from there attend the fundraiser September 27th. And thank you, Mama, for calling in.
Thank you, and you have a beautiful night. And everyone, be happy, healthy, and prosperous.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you,
Mama
Hill.
Would you believe that we have somebody waiting in the next room who's a guest on my show?
Bring them in right now, okay?
Well, what I was going to say is his wife is known as Mama Hillybean.
No way.
Hillybean?
Hillybean. H-I-L-L-Y-B-E-A. Yeah. They used to have a great cafe up in Tehachapi called Mama Hillybean.
All right. It's okay. You want to let them in? Or
if you want. It's not what I was suggesting, but if you want, we can.
Well, I'll tell you what we can do. We really want to talk about the Vet Hunters Project.
Okay.
Can we roll that? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. You want to show that? This is Sunday. As I said at the beginning of the show, we've been pushing the idea of veterans playing a more active role in uplifting life in Skid Row. And here is that idea personified. This Vet Hunters group came in, and here's some footage that shows, yes.
Right here, sir.
Yeah, so they'll be getting.
doing?
All right. Veteran, correct?
No, I'm just a friend. My daughter's a veteran.
All right, sounds good.
Here's the veteran.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
You doing all right?
Welcome.
Take did my you card, guys.
All right, sir.
Okay, I'm sort of direct. I asked him for $100, and I don't know whether he gave it to me or not, but I do have to report it to the IRS.
Yeah, whether I check got your breast not. Pocket.
I don't have a vest. Thank God.
I was just thinking as that was playing, I'm not sure how many people listen only versus watch video. If they listen only, that may not have been the best video to play. There wasn't too much audio in that. Oh, well. But those are some sights and sounds from this weekend. And if you were able to see the video, you saw that military attitude in action. You know, that's what I like, that footage. They really snapped to it.
Well, and when I walked in, they immediately recognized the Marine Corps hat, and they said, you, this way. Yeah. And so we walked right in and passed up everybody, which was kind of embarrassing. But what are you going to do? At any, you know, I really enjoyed visiting with Jose Garcia. And all the guys are there because they're a no-nonsense group. They get right to the heart of the matter. They got no federal funding, no funding from any federal government or bureaucracy. They won't take funds from them. They want funds given to them with no strings attached. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, they're the real deal. We worked closely with them in connection with the stand down last year, mm-hmm. and we're going to do it again this year on November 15th. And also, we're beginning a conversation about working together on some housing projects mm-hmm. for veterans. So we'll be talking more about that in the upcoming weeks.
Now, do we have 4 minutes left? Is that what we're looking at? How much time do we have left?
That's
four
correct.
Minutes left. Okay, well, it's time to do a little shouting, okay? So, Rose, you always want to shout, so shout it out, okay?
Okay, I'll give a shout out for Boreana Books, if you're looking for a book specifically. Yeah, I'm sure you will find it on BoreanaBooks.com. And also check out Lionel Rolf, that's R-O-L-F-E, on Facebook.
Would you get with Lionel and tell him to do an article on us, or we're not going to do any more shout-outs for him? Okay?
I would love to get him on this
already
show.
Yet.
Yeah, well, one hand washes the other. Books. Let's get the washing started.
Also, please check out PenelopeSudro.com. She was in Nightmare on Elm Street. Her website is wonderful. Check it out.
Okay, Scotty.
I want to shout out to Councilman Koretz. Yesterday, you know, buddy, you were with me, and so was Katie Butler from Playa Venice Sunrise. We met with Councilman Koretz. He is going to sponsor the resolution to have Los Angeles become an international city of peace. Councilman Rosen... nope, it's not Rosen.
Obama. Rosendahl?
Nope, he's no longer active. It's actually Councilman...
Mike Munnan?
Blumenfield. Councilman Blumenfield is going to be a second on that. And the International Cities of Peace in Los Angeles, it's really going to happen. So we thanks to all of our councilmen. But until that vote is taken, we urge everybody out there to call their councilmen and tell them to support International City of Peace Initiative for Los Angeles.
And don't forget, we're going to go to Korea. Talk about that a little bit, okay?
From the 17th and 19th of September, we are going to the HWPL, the Heavenly Peace Conference, where it's going to bring over 1,000 religious leaders together and a non-religious, it's not, a nonpartisan religious way to talk about peace and hopefully do more than talk about peace. I'm actually going to be speaking for 10 minutes and I'm going to be talking about 1 billion signatures from every country, no matter what religion they are, when they go back to have their practitioners and non-practitioners to go to our website, sign this petition, and let's get departments of peace within every government worldwide. So,
and I'll be there as the Veterans for Peace News Network. And then after that, I'm going to go all over South Korea, where I fought as a young Marine, and see if I can go to every battlefield in the South, not the North. I'll be going to the 38th parallel and coming down there back to Seoul. And I'll be walking as much as I can and telling my story through a documentary with video documentary. Then I've asked a world famous, I will be asking, I haven't asked her yet, a world famous artist to do paintings because she does murals all over the world. And we'll see how that goes. Jeff, you have some shout outs.
No, I'm just going to shout out to you, beautiful people. It's great that we are finding ways to connect the dots between our respective agendas. And while you're in Korea, it will be my pleasure to receive whatever reports you may wish to submit by video or by talking on the phone, whatever it is, and we'll make sure people are kept abreast.
Well, we'd like to thank all of you out there in Radio Land and TV and YouTube and wherever you may be to keep watching Occupy Skid Row.
What show is on next, by the way, buddy?
I have no idea.
Me neither. Oh, it says right here, The Norman Report.
The Norman Report.
With Cameron Melville and Geza X.
I thought you meant next week.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh. Moments away, Cameron Melville
listen,
and Geza X.
If you haven't heard this or seen this, Jeff Norman is a super reporter, and boy, does he know how to put people on the grid.
I thought he was going to say supermodel, but no, I never get
no,
that.
No, no, no. Now, that's a hairless thing, okay?
Could I? Rose? I just sure. want to just
oh, we're
for
just
those
out of time. We got to wrap. Okay, here we go.
And or listening to OccupySkidRow.us with Chaplain Willis Buddy Clark Jr., a weekly Veterans News Net.us feature presented every Tuesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, live at SkidRowStudios.com. For more information and all of our past episodes, please go to OccupySkidRow.us. Thank you for joining us.